Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the fourth canto, chapter 31, and if we're in the same universe, we are on text 4. Or actually, we're going to do two verses today, because this one has a short purport. And wherever the translators are, I offer my respects. I speak quickly. I apologize. Good luck to you. I'll do my best. If I get too, give me a sign, I'll slow down. Tam agatam ta utaya pranipatyani bandhyacha pujita yatadesham sukhasinam atabhravan tam agatam tam utaya Pani pratya binandya cha puja yitva yata desham sukhashina mutabhravan tamagatam ta utaya pranipatya binandya cha puja yitva yata desham Sukhasinam tabravan tamagatam tamutaya pranipatyani bandhyacha pujayatva yatadesham sukhasinam tabravan. All right. Tam to him. Agatam, thank you, appeared. Te, all the prachetas. Utaya, after getting up. Pranipatya, offering obeisances. Abhinandya, offering welcome. Cha, also. Puja yitva, worshipping. Yata adisham, according to regular principles. Sukha asinam, comfortably situated. Ata, thus. We did it already. Thanks. So. Once was enough. Abruvan, they said. As soon as the prachetas saw the great sage Narada had appeared, they immediately got up, even from their asanas. As required, they immediately offered obeisances and worshipped him. And when they saw him seated, they began to ask him questions. What is the saying that a saintly person is not seen with the eyes, but heard with the ears? So you have to ask some questions so you get some nice hearing. It is significant, Prabhupada's purport, it is significant that all the prachetas were engaged in practicing yoga to concentrate their minds on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're going to do the next verse as well. And I will just read the translation for sake of time. Hare Krishna. All the prachetas began to address the great sage Narada. It's all right. Whatever you do, I'll move it. Thank you, though. All the prachetas began to address the great sage Narada. O great sage, O Brahman, we hope with no disturbance while coming here. It is due to our great good fortune that we are now able to see you. By the traveling of the sun, people are relieved from the fear of darkness of night, a fear brought about by thieves and rogues. Similarly, your traveling is like the sun's, for you drive away all kinds of fear. In Prabhupada's purport. Because of the night's darkness, everyone is afraid of rogues and thieves, especially in the great cities. People are often afraid to go out on the streets, and we understand that even in a great city like New York, people do not like to go out at night. More or less, when it is night, everyone's afraid, either in the city or in the village. However, as soon as the sun arises, everyone is relieved. Similarly, this material world is dark by nature. Everyone's afraid of danger at every moment. But when one sees a devotee like Narada, all the fear is relieved. Just as the sun disperses darkness, the appearance of a great sage like Narada disperses ignorance. When one meets Narada, or his representative, a spiritual master, one is free from all anxiety brought about by ignorance. Om Gana Tamarandasya Gana Gana Silakaya Jakshu Shunmilitan Gina Tazure Shi Gurave Namaha. When I was a young boy, and I was a young boy at one point in time, let that be a warning to the rest of you. When you go into the Vatican Museum, there's a skull. It's the first thing you see. And it says, "You are what I once was. I am what you will become." I'll say it one more time. Picture a skull. It says, "You are what I once was. I am what you will become." So young men out there, take a warning. Use your time wisely. So once when I was a young boy, I had an older brother. I still do. And my older, a bona fide older brother, his duty was to torment me mercilessly. So, I was 6 years old, roughly 6 years old. And I remember watching, he made me watch a horror movie. In India they must have, you know, some big monster and devouring and, you know, like that. Like Kumbhakarna, anyway, you could, so many in the Ramayana and Mahabharata there. Rakshasa devouring. So this one was Frankenstein. And I was a small boy. I was terrified, you know, this lumbering beast, you know, ready to devour all before it. So I went to sleep, and it was a dark and stormy night. And in the middle of the night, in my bedroom, there was a big window, big, and it opened out into a garden. So sure enough, in the middle of the night, there was Frankenstein scratching on the glass to get in and eat me. I thought, if I inhale or exhale, he'll know I'm here, break the glass and come in and devour me like a small, you know, like a pakora, like a little snack item. So I lay there in terror for what seemed, you know, lifetimes. But gradually, as the sun came up, it became clear to me what had happened. There was a line for hanging clothing. And because it was a dark and stormy night, a branch had blown off a tree, caught on the clothesline like this. And when the wind was blowing, it was swinging. And it looked just like two arms. I could see the head. I could see the teeth. The whole thing was a gin. But as soon as the sun came up, I thought, what is this? For so many hours, I was terrified of fright. So as soon as the sun came up, everything became clear. There is a point when we will see Krishna face to face. I was in a darshan, actually it was a class first, in Brooklyn, Henry Street. And Prabhupada said in the class, if you chant 16 rounds, you follow the four regulative principles, you serve the Vaishnavas nicely, and you will see Krishna face to face in this lifetime. Yeah, sounds pretty good, huh? Sign me up. So, Jayadvaita Maharaj, now where is somebody? You could tighten this just a bit. Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Jayadvaita Maharaj asked Prabhupada that afternoon. He said, Prabhupada, you know, 16 rounds, four regulative principles, and we'll see Krishna face to face, serve the Vaishnavas, we'll see Krishna face to face in this lifetime. He was going to say more. Prabhupada cut him right off, said, in this lifetime, why not? So no doubt, just like Brahma shook hands with Krishna, so there is a point where Krishna, there is a point that the sun comes over the horizon. You know, there is, you actually see the disk, the globe, it comes over. There is that point. But even before that point, and that's what I want to talk about, even before that point, everything becomes clear. You know, at night, you can't see anything. Then gradually, you can see some kind of amorphous shapes. Then gradually color washes into the thing, and after a while you can see. It is the business of a devotee, by the grace of his spiritual master, by the association of Vaishnavas, to see everything clearly. So I wanted to talk. Vaisheshika Prabhu was telling me that, and if you're out there at Govardhan Vaisheshika Prabhu, please accept my obeisances. He was standing next to a devotee, and someone, you know, he was on the street selling books, distributing books, and someone asked him, what does Hare Krishna mean? Now we know Hare Rama, we know the usual explanation. But this devotee said, the man, just understanding the audience, the man asked, what does this Hare Krishna mean? And the devotee responded, it means, I need help. So we can think about that for a moment. If the Kali Yuga is saturated, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. It is saturated with pride. Prabhupada said, even the pauper is proud of his penny, and that arrogance pervades everything. We think, I'm just trying to think of the time factor. If, suppose I say to you, hey, I'm my own man. I don't depend on anyone, especially in the West, but it's pervading everywhere, this arrogance. That, you know, you're bowing down and you're, you know, all this, you know, you think you, you know, if you want to believe in God, fine. It gets you through at night, you know, it's for old ladies and people afraid of death, fine. Go ahead. But me, I'm a self-made man. I stand on my own 2 feet. And just to prove it, I am not going to be dependent on air. Okay, count. How long am I going to make it? I mean, if I'm really stubborn, I may pass out and die, you know. But, you know, maybe I'll make it. What the deep sea pearl divers have, you know, free diving. I don't know how long they go. Anyone know? Usually amongst us here. But maybe 8 minutes, 10 minutes. Let's give them 20 minutes. Let's give them 20 minutes. But sooner or later, what has to happen? So to admit that I am dependent on air, is that a sign of weakness? What do you think? If I say, hey, if I have a broken leg to depend on crutches, is that a sign of weakness? It's a sign of intelligence. Rather to say, I'm not going to drink water. To hell with water. I'm beyond water. Well, good luck to you. You know? So my point being that to recognize dependence, to recognize our actual position, is not a sign of weakness, a sign of intelligence. Anything other than that, to not recognize, there's E. Cummings, Prabhupada will quote poems sometimes, and it goes, it's talking about a child, it says, as up they grow, down they went. You ask a child, is there God? Well, of course. You know, I'm dependent on my mother and father. They're providing for me. The air, the sun, the wind, so many. I don't even know how my food is digesting. So we are completely dependent at every moment. And the natural. And Prabhupada points out, of course, it gives the standard of what Prabhupada considers the ordinary man. But there's that wonderful purport Prabhupada's describing. Second canto, I think it's in the first canto, second. Lord of the Heart. Where's that chapter, Lord of the Heart? So second canto, beginning of it. And Prabhupada describes it how by careful analysis we can understand that we're not this body. Then we can understand that actually we're dependent. And then we can understand that that dependency is a higher intelligence. There's a whole progression Prabhupada brings one to the point of bhakti. It's a fantastic purport. So that the modern approach to things is that everything is subordinate to my intelligence. There's another disease, that's another class. That disease that we think that we have, our birthright is that we should be titillated at every second. We think that actually the default mode in this world is that I should be happy. And if I'm not happy, something's wrong. Actually, Prabhupada told Ramaswar. Ramaswar said, Prabhupada, we're trying to serve Krishna. Things are going smoothly, and every now and then there's some disturbance. You know, where is Krishna? Prabhupada just chuckled. He said, no, you've got it all wrong. The fact of the matter is this world is always disturbed. And by Krishna's grace, there's a few moments of peace. That's the actual way to understand this world. That it's not that everything should go smoothly, everything. And actually, that's where the devotion comes. That's a whole other issue. But the point I wanted with that disease that, hey, we're always a pilot who's flying a plane. I was talking to a pilot. He was telling me, and I forget the number, but it's like so many, like 50, 60 times a minute, the plane is getting course corrections. Because the gravity is there, wind is there, so much. It's always, to go in a straight line, it has to make constant course corrections, a plane in the air. In a similar fashion, we are always making constant course corrections. Am I happy? Am I happy? Am I happy? Too hot, too hot, too cold, too cold. Want to be here, want to be there, wish I was this, hankering. The mind is constantly course, and it's a feverish pitch. So we are suffering in that state. Another disease that we have, of our feverish mentality, the darkness of ignorance from which we're suffering, which is, we're relieved by the association of great saints, the thrust of this verse, the theme of this verse. Another one of those illusions is that everything should be subordinate to my intelligence. Everything can be broken down into small pieces that I can manipulate, control, and understand. That is the modern empiric mechanistic approach to life. The top guy at MIT, one of the top guys, IIT trembles before MIT. So the top guys at IIT, they say that the secrets of the universe are able to be written on a t-shirt, like E equals MC squared. Actually, it can. It's the Hare Krishna mantra, but that's another thing, you know. But the idea that the whole thing can be written, everything. When I was a child, again, I once was a child, my brother and I, my father said two halfwits make a nitwit, so my brother and I combined together. We got the bright idea. My parents, my grandparents, we were staying at their house, had one of those grandfather clocks. You know those, they call them grandfather. But this one is quite fancy. It had a little marching band that came out. It had little soldiers, the clocks, everything. You know, the seasons changed, day changed. So a little bird came out. All kinds of stuff happened. So my brother and I, left alone, was an idle mind, is a devil's workshop. So we got the idea that let's take the thing apart. Hey, how difficult could it be? We'll just take everything out in sequence, and then we'll just reverse the process and put the thing back together. Didn't work out that way. After about 25 minutes, we had this pile of pieces. We had no idea how it all fit together. I spent the entire summer working in my grandfather's garden for free to pay for that clock being repaired. But the point is, the idea that everything should be subordinate to our intelligence that can be broken down into little pieces. Why? Why? Just think for a minute. Why? I travel, and I happen to... I also grow flowers for the deities. Our deities, Radha Giridhari in San Diego. It's my therapy. It's either that or basket weaving. Try being a GBC for it. You just try it sometime, you know? So my therapy is that I grow flowers for the deities. So I had some nice mogra, this fragrant rose. So many nice things are there. I was traveling for some time. I came back. I was watering the rose. What had happened is a whole colony of ants had moved into that. You know? And when I started watering it, they all panicked. You know, men and women and children first, and they were all trying to escape. And you can be sure in the history of the annals of the hit, you know, the colony, it will say, you know, the flood of 2013. They had no idea that behind the water was a hose, behind the hose was a faucet, behind the faucet was a hand, and behind the hand was me. They had no idea. You know, people used to think that the world was flat. They asked Prabhupada one time, is the world flat? He said, everywhere I walk it is. And then he said, except for New Vrindavan. But anyway, that's another issue. But the idea, so they had, you can function. People were able to function thinking that the world was flat. They think so. So take another example. Christopher Columbus ant. Again, he goes exploring. He's sent out by the queen. Ants have a queen? Bees have a queen. I don't know about ants. I think they do. Anyway, off they go. And he goes exploring. I'm here droning on. You're all patiently listening. The ant is climbing, 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 climbing. And then he reports back. great vistas, uncharted lands, all uninhabited. You follow? He's climbing on me. I'm a person, but from his little tiny room, he can't see anything. So we are so arrogant that everything is ultimately subordinate to our intelligence. Why? We are insignificant. Prabhupada said you're being kicked like a football. American football or Indian football, either way, you know, soccer, whatever you want to call it. We are being buffeted from pillar to post at every moment. They asked Prabhupada when Prabhupada, this is 1973. Of course, India was third world, America was first world. Now they're changing, trust me. I never saw a beggar in my life before I came to in America. I never, now you can't, you know, they're all over the streets. They call them homeless, but it's the same principle. India's becoming first world, America's becoming third world. Although before I forget, Malati Mataji told me she was on a walk with Srila Prabhupada. Talking first world, third world, you know, higher, lower, all this. Prabhupada heard a sound. They said, Prabhupada asked, what is that? Malati Mataji said that is a trash dumpster. And they pick up all the garbage and they throw it in the truck and they haul it away. Prabhupada said, oh, the whole material world should be thrown in there. So first world, second world, we're not too impressed, really. Still, they asked Prabhupada, why is the death rate so high in India? Prabhupada said, death rate is the same everywhere, 100%. I was on a walk, I was, in my own mind, you know, a golden boy kissed by the gods, living in Southern California. The sea breeze was blowing. If I just stayed on the conveyor belt, everything was going to work out great. Until I met a devotee. And you think I'm arrogant now? You should have seen me then. By Krishna's grace, I'm a little bit better. The devotee, you know, I was droning on about this, and I said, you know, you think you have to live like this, you know, like sour grapes, you know, you've taken a renunciation. You probably were failing, you know, but me, like I say, those who say money can't buy happiness just don't know where to shop. So I was thinking, you know, fine for you, you know. But the devotee was, I remember Sukadev, to this day I'm in his debt. He said to me, he said, you know, there is one thing about this world. I said, what's that? What can you tell me? He said, nobody gets out of here alive. And it just blew my whole, I thought it just rattled around in my brain. He said, it's true. What is the use of the whole thing? Nobody gets out of here alive. So, the fact of the matter is, this world is a very dangerous place. Adi Bhautik, Adi Daivik, Adi Atmik. There is danger at every step. It is no place for a gentleman, as Prabhupada used to say. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say. I guess I'll say it, because again I'm thinking about time. There is a nice example that Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj gives. I don't know if he requires a commission for this, but I'm using his example. A man is walking through the field, and it's the beautiful flowers are there, fragrant, everything's just great. And all of a sudden, he falls into a blind well. Ah! He's grabs onto two things. As his eyes adjust, he sees that what he's holding on to are two roots. And one, there's a black rat gnawing his way through. The other one, there's a white rat gnawing his way through. He's saying, oh man, I'm not going to be here long. He looks down, there's a big cobra. Come on down. Come on down. He looks up, there's a tiger leaning over the top saying, come on up. Come on up. So the analogy is that we have fallen into the well, Andhakupa, this dark well, and we're holding on to the two roots, but black and white rats, daytime, nighttime, they're gnawing through. With every rising and setting of the sun, a day passes and is lost. Then why do you remain idle and not serve the Lord of the heart, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. So this is our predicament. Looking down is the prana, is the life force. It's going. It's fading. It's going very quickly. And you look up. What is the tiger? Durga rides on a tiger. That's the three modes of nature. And Adi Bhautik, Adi Daivik, and Adi Atmik. So what to do? And yet the man, he feels something on his head. He looks up. Over the mouth of the well, there's a tree with a branch, and there's a little beehive there, and a little honey is dropping. And he thinks, hey, not so bad. That is our condition in this world. We should look at it with clarity, that it is a difficult, dangerous, dank, dark, dismal place. Okay, fine. Am I leaving you there? Well, so what? You know, Camus, the only thing to do is whether to commit suicide or not, because all of life is futile. Bury me under a fruit tree, at least I'll be fertilizer. Suppose Dharmaprabhu was a very nice brahmachari. Suppose I gave him $100. Hey, GBC finally paid off. I got something out of it. Not so bad. Then you go back to the... Of course, you're renounced, detached. You'd immediately give it to your spiritual master, give it to the deity, something like that. But then you associate with the rest of the devotees and you find out, hey, hang on a minute. I gave Devaki $1,000. I gave you $1,000. I gave everybody else $1,000. Then how? All of a sudden, how do you feel? Hey, what the? How come I only got 100? You follow? He was happy with 100, but as soon as he found there was 1,000, immediately the mind changes. So people are asking, God, give me this. God, give me that. Prabhupada was riding on a train. Satsuru Maharshi told me this. And, you know, they typically think that a sadhu is like an ATM machine. Just, you know, give me blessings, you know. I bow down, give me blessings, you know. So Prabhupada was riding on the train trying to do his translating work. And there were some Bengali brahmacharis, Chatterjee, Mukherjee, Banerjee, whatever, you know. They all wanted to, they wanted to get some blessings. So the devotees were there like standing guard, like rugby, and they were trying to, somehow they got through. And they said, oh, Swamiji, Swamiji, give us some blessing, give us blessings. Prabhupada was not so cheap. Prabhupada said, and what are those blessings? And they'd never been asked that. They thought, you know, just ask for blessings and it comes back. ATM. So the man said, yes, well, I have this arthritis in my knee. It's my knee. Prabhupada made a face like, wrong thing. So the next man said, well, you know, they were a little intelligent, Brahmins, they could understand. They said, well, yes, and my family, my family, may they also be happy. Again, Prabhupada made the wrong face. Like concentric circles radiating out from myself to my family. Then the guy said, well, yes, and peace on earth, goodwill to men, you know, if they throw in some of those. Again, Prabhupada said, you want my blessings? These are my blessings. And he pointed, he said, this saffron cloth. And he pointed to thin little Satsuru Maharaj, you know, at that time apparently advanced and renounced this world. So they freaked, they left immediately. That blessing they didn't want. But that is the real blessings that one becomes. If one becomes detached from this world and attached, there is, we are not, Prabhupada said that my disease is I cannot think small. The human form of life is not meant that, well, I made it to the mall and back with a GPS, or, you know, I took care of my little wife and my family and I dropped dead Kijai. That is not what human life is meant for. I guess I'll say it this way. Our problems are solved. We think we have some... I was in an airport in Los Angeles. A man said to Prabhupada, are you liberated? You know, usually Prabhupada, like, can you see God? Prabhupada would say, you know, what is this question? How can you measure? A devotee told me that Prabhupada in London at the manor, Prabhupada's Vyasa-san is here, deity's here, packed house, a man stood up, can you see God? Prabhupada said, yes, but you're standing in the way. You know? So the guy just sat down, you know. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada had many ways of answering these things. So this person asked, they asked, okay, are you liberated? Prabhupada said, yes. And the man said, then why don't you go back to Krishna right now? You know, the Brahmacharis were about to pounce on this guy and throttle him, you know. But Prabhupada said, he was in the airport. He said, just like I have my ticket. When the plane comes, I have my ticket. I'll get on the plane and go. Prabhupada said, you know, what is it? We have these six symptoms of the devotional service. You know, I'm initiated by a bona fide spiritual master. I'm chanting the holy name. I'm living in a holy place. Prabhupada said, holy place, five things. Holy place, the equivalent is to live at a temple. So, you know, at sadhu sangha, to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. If one, I'm doing these things. I have my ticket. As long as I have my ticket, when Krishna wants, I'll go. You know? So our problems are solved, even in this world. Like what Prabhupada gives the example, Bhagavatam gives the example of a coconut when it becomes ripe. You have the husk, and then you have the coconut inside, and you shake them, they're independent. Our problems, there's so many examples of devotees. The problems are solved, practically speaking, you know? Bhakti Raghava Maharaj, is he here? He was telling me, you know, he had that leg, and when they attacked, the dacoits attacked the temple, thought the deities, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radharani was so shining, effulgent gold, they thought they'd steal and melt her down, you know? They attacked the temple. Devotees, they threw some bomb, you know, tape with a firework and nails inside, blew his leg off. He said, it was a lame leg anyway, it was always causing me trouble. Krishna took care of it, you know? I mean, that's a pretty far out way to look at things, you know? How a devotee sees things. Amananda, he told me this personally, he and Pustakrishna. Pustakrishna at the time was his brahmachari assistant. They were preaching in Pakistan when the Bangladesh war broke out and the Muslims were killing Hindus left and right. Prabhupada sent them a telegram, get out, get out. And when they came to the border to leave, you know, everyone was trying to grow a beard and, you know, get rid of, you know, disguise himself as a, inshallah, you know, trying to get out of the place, disguise himself as a Muslim. When they got to the border, Muslim soldiers were there. I'm not picking on Muslims, Christians, Jews, Hindus, everybody does crazy things, so don't get hung up on that. But this particular instance, Muslim soldiers looked down the bus. Everyone's there trying to, you know, look as, inshallah, as possible. Allahu Akbar. In the picture, in the back, there's a brahmachari and his sannyasi. And the sannyasi, you know, shaved head, sikha, tila, kunti mala. I mean, you know, just took him off the bus, put him on the side of the road. There were other people who'd been shot. Set up, you know, pull back the machine gun, aim to fire. And Brahmananda, to his credit, put his hand in his bead bag. And said, put your hand in your bead bag, Prabhu. We're going back to Godhead. And they, just like you get your picture snapped, they just pose. What else could you do? You know? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. It's so, because everyone else was crying for their mother and begging, you know, this and that. The devotees were fearless. Because they were fearless, the Muslim soldiers, to their credit, could understand, these are saintly people. They said, just get on the bus and go. They let the devotees go, you know? It's true. But my point is, that our problems are solved. Well, what is it Prahlad Maharaj says? That, anybody out here seek distress? We have any masochists among us? Just take a brick, hit yourself in the head a few times? Any masochists out there looking for... Okay, nobody out here, glad to hear we did a quick mental check, nobody out here is seeking pain. Now let me ask you a question. Does pain come to you? Raise your hand if difficulty comes. Hey, raise both hands. They have a saying, if it's not one thing, it's another. No, it'll be both. Trust me. So the simple point is that no one looks for misery, but misery comes unsought. Now the logical conclusion, if something is true, the converse is also true. You know, it's a simple mathematical algebraic principle. If something is true, the opposite is true. So if... there's a big hint. If misery comes unsought, in spite of our trying to avoid it at all costs, what will also happen? Happiness will come unsought. It comes automatically. You can't stop it. So instead of feverishly seeking happiness, which at the time of birth, the number of breath on our head by Lord Brahma. So why get all feverish about it? It's going to come or not come. The actual thing is, and I wouldn't be doing my duty. Well, I'll say this first. Remind me that I want to say something controversial. The door's right there. Keep the motor running, okay? We'll make a fast exit. But I was giving an example of the coconut shell and the husk. You know, have you ever... They still have circuses, and they get the lion to jump through the flaming hoop. You know, have you ever seen that? Now, that's actually quite dangerous. The lion has that big mane. It could catch on fire. Do you know why the lion jumps through that hoop? He's freaked by the whip. The cracking, he doesn't know where that cracking sound of the whip is coming from. It's therefore he'll cooperate. He thinks he's going to get hit with it, and he doesn't. Therefore, out of fear, he's jumping. They actually had this. There's these in Las Vegas, which I think is a great name, by the way. Las Vegas, you know Las Vegas? Kama Vega, Crow Vegas, or Sella. It's a great name, you know. It's actually quite nice. I thought of that the other day. It just hit me. But anyway, they have a circus, and people are jumping through. The lion is jumping through. It's a true story. One day the lion said, "Hey, wait a minute. Why am I jumping through this thing?" And he turned on the trainer and almost killed him. He said, "Hey, I've been jumping through this hoop for so long. I had enough of this, you know." And he went after the trainer. We just like the bull. You know how the bull is controlled? Bull, you know, a big bull. There's a big black bull that hangs out over here by the MVT. Man, if that bull wants to go somewhere, you know, he's going to go. They say, where does the 2-ton gorilla sit? And the answer is anywhere he wants. When that bull wants to go. But how is a bull controlled? A little, like it's a septum, I think it's called, but right through the nose, it's very sensitive. So a giant bull, a little boy can control it with that ring. It's said in the same way, and the Bhagavatam describes, we are controlled by our senses. We're controlled by the mind. So what is it, the six senses, including the mind, they're living at the, struggling like anything. So we need, by the benefit of an acharya, the great saintly, by the Vaishnavas, we say, wait a minute. There's a whole other way to live. There's a whole other alternative. I remember the first time I saw devotees. I was in a taxi cab. It was pouring rain. I was miserable. The taxi cab driver, everybody else around me was miserable. We were all miserable. It was a collective funk. And I saw, we were at a red light, and I saw the devotees come dancing across. And we didn't have cotton dhotis on those. They had polyester dhotis. It was raining. They wouldn't wear leather. They had these army boots on. They had these, because it was rubber, you know. So they had these rubber army boots. I'd never seen a devotee in my life, you know. Sika. I thought, oh my God. I thought, you know, either they're on drugs. I did. I thought either they're on drugs, they're completely mad, they've lost their minds, or they are tasting something beyond this world. They are tasting something that is not mundane. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Sojate Na Kanchate. They're somewhere else. They're one of the three. Later on, the fog cleared, and I realized what those three things were. My point, again, quoting Vaisheshika Prabhu, he has a nice sutra. He has a number of these sutras. And one of them is called the attitude. And this is the point I want to get to, and then we'll wrap up. Attitude of gratitude. You can all say after me, attitude of gratitude. Well, all right, whatever. It worked out. You got the picture. Our problems are solved. Just like we have that, Prabhupada said, I have the ticket when the plane comes to Godhead. Somebody gave the example yesterday of a green mango and a ripe mango. The only difference is time, right? But there's another difference, an element of that time. What does that mango have to do? It has to stay on the tree. You snap it from the tree, it'll rot. So as long as we're connected to the process of bhakti, as long as we're in the association of Vaishnavas, as long as we don't commit some mad elephant offense, then sure, green mango, ripe mango, only time is separating us. Our problems are solved. Navina Narata, just see the benefit of a few minutes association with a saintly person. Somehow or other, he asked me, or we were talking, is there justice in the universe? And I answered, inappropriately actually, I answered, there's a verse in the Bible, the wheel of justice turns slowly, but it grinds infinitely fine. I like it. It's a good verse on one hand, you know. Everybody gets exactly what they deserve in their own time. You know, we have our time, Krishna has his time, but everybody gets exactly what they deserve. Navina Narada corrected me. He said, no, Prabhu, that's not actually true. We actually get more than we deserve. We are so fallen, foolish, and yet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears before us, Lord Nityananda, without any qualification, and gives us the holy name, gives us devotional service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that actually the conditioned souls, they're doing all their nonsense. They're doing so many, who can even chronicle the list of foolish things they're doing? But in the core of their heart, they're looking out the window, and they're wondering, when will Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan party come and save me? When will the Vaishnavas deliver me from this miserable condition? That's how they're actually thinking. So we should have the attitude of gratitude that our problems are solved. Whatever's left is some token reaction for some horrible thing I've done. I deserve it. Let it fall on my hand. You know? Let me... They spent millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, renovating the downtown in San Diego. And the idea is we'll make it super fancy, fancy shops. You know, it's all wet stool, dry stool. We're not impressed. But still, fix the whole thing up, spend millions of dollars. Everyone will come and shop. You know, it was great. So they did it. The problem was the homeless people were still there. So you're sitting, you know, in some fancy restaurant, believe me, with wine and some dessert. I mean, it's a pile of bones and feathers that they're eating. It's horrible, nasty stuff. But they're paying hundreds of, you know, $100, $200 per person. For New Year's Eve, there was it's a big thing in America. We were out chanting and dancing. You know, it's blissful, so much fun. This man came up to me, came out of a so-called fancy restaurant. I was leading the kirtan. He came up to me, and he was in a tuxedo, you know, fancy dress. He gave me a $100 bill, stuck it in my pocket. I said, thank you very much, sir. So I let someone else lead. I wanted to find out what was he thinking, so I asked him. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, I'm in there with five other couples. He said, each of us are spending, each couple, several hundred dollars. So he said, right at the table, it's $1,000, $1,500 right there. He said, now we're going to the Grand Ballroom, which is a big dance. He said, you know, to get in there, it's $1,500 per couple, you know. He said, so many, he said, by the time this, our group of four people, he said, by the end of the night, we will have spent $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 US. And that restaurant is full of people all doing the same thing. He said, and you know what? He said, you guys, pointing to the devotees, he said, you're the only ones that were happy. And I told him, given my nature, I said, you know what? I said, we're doing it for free, you know? So he laughed. He appreciated it, you know? So our problems are solved. So therefore, this downtown San Diego fancy, homeless people are still there. So you're in the restaurant, you know, you're trying to, what is it? Anyway, it's another ditty. Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. You know, you're trying to seduce your girlfriend or whatever it is, you know? Spending all this money. And here's some homeless person pressing their nose on the glass. Spoils the whole mood, you know? You go to shopping and some guy's passed urine on the doorstep. Ah, no one would come downtown. What to do? Their plan was backfiring. Hundreds of millions of dollars wasted. What to do? They flew in the best town planners, from urban planners from around the world. PhD, which in some circles means permanent head damage. But anyway, flew in the PhDs, you know? Blue Ribbon Commission. Met for 6 weeks. You know what their conclusion was? Hundreds of thousands of dollars in consultation fees. They said, put up curtains. Put up curtains. If you don't see them, it won't break the mood. What kind of civilization, what kind of miserly people come up with an answer like that? It's described as one thing. Vaishnavas are tolerant, more tolerant than the tree. One thing that Vaishnavas cannot tolerate. It's not snoring. That's second. What's the one thing? They cannot tolerate the cries of the living entities, the sufferings of the living entities being crushed by the material nature. That's the one thing the Vaishnavas cannot tolerate. So, one last, just to pile it on, then I'll get to my summary. I went to my high school reunion. I didn't want to go. They sent me the, what do I want to, who cares for the, you know, Hare Krishna. I had enough of them when I was living with them, you know. But some of the devotees prevailed on me. Yeah, you should go. You know, you should just, you know, you can, it's a nice chance to present Krishna consciousness. So I thought, all right, whatever. It's free, so I went. And sure enough, it was a wonderful, I'm 61 years old, so whatever that was, you know, 40 plus years ago. The guy named Curly was bald. You know, the top running back for the football team was in a wheelchair. Slim, you know, it's a nickname for being skinny. He weighed 240 pounds, you know. Everybody had to wear name tags because, you know, by sight, you couldn't tell who they were, you know. Everybody had to have, put their glasses on, take off their other glasses, put their reading glasses. Oh, all right, so you're so, oh, I remember you. But the most blissful part of it was I had a number of people come up to me and tell me, when I heard that you joined the Hare Krishna movement, that you'd become a monk, I thought you'd lost your mind. There's that, somehow I'm thinking of poetry, but I think it's Frost who says, you know, two paths converged in the forest, and I took the one less traveled, and that has made all the difference. It's a nice, actually a nice line of, you know. So they thought, you know, you took that path, and we thought, just, you know, I might as well have been beamed up by aliens, you know. How is it possible? They said, now there's enough time that they've gone down their path, I've gone down my path. One man told me, I could possibly want in the world, Om Jaya Jagadish Hari, give me a new car and a house by the sea. I got it all. I got everything I want. You know? I'm on my third wife. I kept upgrading, you know, I get new, younger, this, you know. I got everything I want. He told me the prenuptial agreement took longer to write than the marriage ceremony, you know. So I got everything I want. He said, and you know what? I spent my whole life chasing happiness and it slipped through my fingers. He said, I don't know where it went. I don't know where it went. He said, what is the use? I had a number of people tell me, I had another man tell me, what is the value of my life? He said, all I've done is take up space on this planet. He said, what will be, when I die, what will it make? I thought of this example. It actually makes sense. Take a bucket of water, okay? Mind, you know, what do you call it? Mental exercise, mind experiment. Take a bucket of water, okay? Put your hand in it. Now, what happens to the water line? It's at one place, you put your hand in it, what happens? It goes up. What happens when you take your hand out? It goes back to the exact same place. It's as if your hand was never there, right? Are we meant to live in this world like that? That we don't make any difference? Dogs and hogs discharge semen and maintain families. Even a bellows breathes. Trees live for thousands of years. What is the use of a life like this? What have we actually done for others? So here's my controversial point. Get the car running. We may be comfortable here in Vrindavan. And for some, that's great. Take shelter of the holy Dham. I don't in any way mean to criticize. The Prabhupada said intelligence means the ability to balance opposing points within the mind. So I'm not saying either or. Don't go one dimensional on me. But the point is that Prabhupada met Madhavis and Madhavisa Prabhu. He said to Prabhupada, it says in the Gita that that one who has reactions to sinful be eradicated and has lifetimes of pious deeds, such a person can take the devotional life. You follow? He said, but me, he said, I didn't have a stockpile of pious deeds. I had sinful activity so the moment I met you. How is it possible that I've taken to devotional service? Prabhupada said, I have created your good fortune. He said, all I ask is that you go and create good fortune for others. Prabhupada came to Detroit. We should end. Prabhupada came to Detroit, sat down on the Vyasa Sun. In the defense of the devotees, including me, He was supposed to go from Dallas to Toronto to Detroit because there was the chance of getting the Detroit building prop, but came early. So everything we should have, we thought we had a week, we put it all into 2 days. None of the devotees had slept. Hardly at all. When Prabhupada sat down on his Vyasasan, first morning, you know, it was, for many of the devotees, it was the first time they'd actually, you know, been stationary. And practically to a man and a woman and child, everybody fell asleep. I mean, it was like Kamsa's prison, you know, whatever. The entire population in the it was out, sannyasis, everybody was out cold. Prabhupada sat down, he looked out, and Prabhupada had been reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita had just come out, so instead of Bhagavatam, he's reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, he was describing causeless mercy. That was the point I'm trying to make. He was describing causeless mercy. He said, it's just like a poor man, if you're walking down the road, and all of a sudden, you find a bag full of gold, or you get a letter that you've inherited millions, you know, you win the lottery. I mean, these, it just falls out of the sky on you. That's causeless mercy. So Prabhupada said, looking at the devotees, he said, in the same way, this movement is going on by the mercy of Krishna alone. And he saw he's asleep and chuckled to himself and said, that is a fact. So we are going on by the mercy of Krishna alone. That's a fact, you know. Our problems are solved. Therefore, what we should be feeling, we should not... Prabhupada said, what is this peace? You know, I want to become peaceful. I'm so peaceful in Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, I spit on this peace. Prabhupada asked, he said, I asked for the benediction that I could fight like Arjuna to my last breath. And we see how expertly Krishna fulfilled that prayer. Prabhupada was lying on a disappearance bed in Vrindavan, right over here. And you can see, till his last breath, he was giving his Bhagavatam purports. Literally his last breath. As we have received causeless mercy, we should not ask for what we are not willing to give. I'm going to say that one more time. We should not ask for what we are not willing to give. We expect people to tolerate us. I had a bad day, Prabhu. I'm sorry I lost my temper, you know. All right, you know, I'm on a Rahu period, you know. I'm sorry, you know, whatever. You always have so many things, you know. And it's true. We expect people to tolerate us. We expect people, I do, my self-centered nature. We expect people to be kind to us. Are we willing to be kind to others? Are we willing to tolerate? Prabhupada said the measure of a Vaishnava's character, strict with himself, lenient with others. Strict with himself, lenient with others. If we can go on in this way peacefully, let me serve. Well, let me tolerate. Let me feel gratitude. And let me distribute mercy to others. That is our real business, especially as initiated devotees. We should not be just taking up space. But what can we do for the crying conditioned souls? That is our mission. I'll end you with one thing. There was a man. He was blind, poverty-stricken, and no children. You know, in a pious society, they like to have children. So he has only one wish. He runs into a genie, and he's given one wish, and he can't wish for unlimited wishes, okay? Toss that one out, lawyers amongst you. I was giving class one time, and I said, Krishna sees everything, just like the sun and the moon. You know, the one eye, you close one, the other one is there. So Krishna can see everything, sun and the moon. If even either the sun is shining or the moon is shining. A little kid sitting in the front said, what about a moonless night? I said, just see, this kid should be an attorney. He's perfect. You know, train him up as a lawyer. So, you can't wish. Blind, one problem. Poverty stricken, okay, another problem. And no children. So what did the man wish for? What did he wish for? He wished to see his children from the roof of his palace. You follow? See my children from the roof of my palace. One wish, everything fulfilled. So I'll end here. As we have received causeless mercy, we should go out and give mercy to others. That is the measure of a Vaishnava. And that will bring happiness to us and to everyone. It is good for us and good for others. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. And because of the time factor, we're going to forego questions. Somebody always, you know, it's a stump the Swami question, you know. Who was the name of the, you know, find it on folio. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. I got it.